Welcome to Crime in Plastic, a gripping podcast where I, Dr. Miami, one of the world's top plastic surgeons, and my co-host,
Santina,
the amateur true crime researcher, delve into the often unseen world where true crime and plastic surgery intersect. Each week, I share my expertise and insights into the complex world of cosmetic procedures, while Santina
gives you the shocking details of criminal investigations.
From notorious criminals undergoing drastic transformations to evade the law,
to even our own personal encounters with true crime and plastic surgery,
all will be uncovered.
So sit back, relax,
or don't,
because this is Crime and Plastic.
So what's on tap today? Tell me the story.
So this story begins a long time ago at the turn of last century.
Are you serious?
Well, that's where the key characters was born.
I got it. I'm thinking yes. 1800s. You're talking like 1980s, the turn of the last century.
Yeah, that was the last century, right?
It was.
I didn't know what a century was.
Go ahead.
This is the story of Joan Robinson Hill.
Joan Robinson Hill?
Yes.
Okay.
How come Rosie got the easy names?
Yeah, I did. These are the...
My episodes had really hard names.
Bob Bieberbaum.
No, these are all very easy names. And it takes place in Texas, where you would expect crazy things.
Or Florida. Or California.
If you're from Texas, don't be offended. We're in Florida.
So we'll start with Joe. We have to go back to Joan's dad, because he does eventually play a big part in the story.
Okay.
So Joan's dad is Davis Ash Robinson.
Okay.
He was born in 1898.
Okay. Oh, no. 1800s?
Yes.
Yo, that's older than my grandfather.
Old. He was born to Sherwood and Eunice, and they're both from the South. Sherwood was from Mississippi. Eunice was from Louisiana.
Country folk.
Yes, very like old South, Southern aristocracy kind of people. Sherwood decided to become a doctor.
Sherwood.
Yes, Sherwood did. And he moved from Mississippi to Louisiana.
Okay.
And then he had to go see a rich patient's daughter who was sick, and he married her.
Oh, so he saved her.
Yes.
Do you think that he would have let her die if he didn't have the intention to marry?
So Eunice and Sherwood got married.
So that's how they met.
That's how they met. So and they had little Davis Ash, who liked to be called Ash.
Good, because I know a man named Davis and I'm not a fan.
And then they moved to Texas, which was full of opportunity. Texas was kind of like a new frontier. And Ash was like a true Southern boy, drawn to the land. He liked history, archaeology, and he went to Tulane for college. And he studied to be a...
Tulane is in New Orleans?
Tulane in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And he decided to study dentistry, actually, because he wanted to please his father, even though he had...
Was his father a dentist?
No, his father was a doctor, but he figured that was close enough.
Close enough.
In fact, it's better.
Would he have preferred to be like a rancher?
Yes.
Oh,
well, so he just wanted to make his dad happy, but...
It's a good son.
He...
Dutiful son.
He studied it for 3 years, and then they said he had to do like another month, and he's like, no. He didn't want to be a dentist anyway. He's like, I'm not studying it for another minute.
I can't stand teeth. I'm done with teeth. I hate the mouth. Okay, fine. So he quit dental school.
Goes back to the land? Well, his mom dies and he gets $69,000.
That's a lot of money.
I actually have an inflation calculator here ready because I had a feeling you guys would ask these questions.
Plus, wasn't that kind of during the
it was before the Depression.
But wartime.
Yeah.
Wartime.
So,
people made money that time. It was booming.
So $69,000 back then was $1.6 million.
He doesn't have to be a dentist. He has to be anything.
So his dad tells him that this is more money than most men see in their lifetime.
True.
And I suggest you get rid of it as fast as possible so you can see what life is really like. That was his dad's advice to him. So Ash blew all his money on horses. In 6 months, he spent it all.
Blew it like on betting on horses?
Yes.
Or he bought horses?
No, betting on horses on the racetrack.
Wow.
He didn't make any of it.
Nope.
He's a fucking terrible gambler.
He lost it all.
I was once a gambler. 5 days after the Super Bowl, I went to the lowest of lows, Rosie. I was betting women's tennis at 7:30 in the morning. And then I had to delete it. That's when I knew.
So yeah, you blew $69,000.
So I know what that feels like.
Okay.
I lost $50. Over the course of 5 days.
Yeah.
$50 does not compare to $69,000.
That's not the amount. It's when you get to the point where you can't control yourself.
So this was the equivalent of $1.6 million he lost in 6 months.
That's pretty good.
I could have done that.
So it did give him a taste for the nice life. You know,
well, what's nice about losing money?
Because when he had, I guess he didn't spend all of it on the track. He got into like nice restaurants and like open doors and nice people. And then he met Ray Gardier. And she was also a Southern Belle. They said they could trace her back to the last king of France. So she was, but she had no money. She was a poor.
Neither did he.
She was a poor.
He lost it all.
So he met her.
He couldn't, she couldn't stop him from gambling it all away.
I think he married her when he was all done with his money.
Oh.
So they got married when he had $10 left.
If he could have met her earlier, this whole story would be different.
No, and maybe, but his dad advised.
I don't know how the story ends, but since it's crime and plastic, I bet there would be no crime if she would have met him earlier.
But his dad gave him the advice to spend all the money.
That's terrible advice.
Because I think he wanted him to make his own money and not be spoiled. I don't know. He just told him, you'll see how life really is. I suggest you get rid of this money.
Wait, you
want to
hear something? I know a guy who is going to medical school, right? So he starts getting into like trading or some shit like that.
Yeah.
He ends up making like, basically his whole plan was to go into like this trading stuff and make enough money to pay for medical school. And he starts making like a lot of money really fast.
Right.
And he makes the amount like within the first 6 months.
Of what he needs for medical school?
For what he needs for medical school.
Fantastic.
And he like literally just stops. He makes the money, puts it away and stops.
Good
and
discipline.
He goes, yeah, because I don't want to get like so used to having like all this money. I feel like it'll change me.
It's a good idea.
Wow.
What the?
That's serious discipline. That guy should be a doctor. He has that much passion for medicine over money.
Yeah.
That's the guy you want. I was driven.
You were driven.
Driven, right?
Yes,
like that's nothing could have distracted, like nothing, no amount of money or girl, nothing could distract.
Right. So then Ash, penniless, married. He he's very entrepreneurial and ambitious, though. So he goes. He is.
After he lost $1.5 million, he becomes an entrepreneur.
No, he was. No, he like always kept his ear open to hear like what was going on, what he could, where he could make some more money. So he gets his opportunity to work with Cornelius Vanderbilt Jr.
Vanderbilt, like the one who third of the world, the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. The railroad and shipping magnate.
Well, he was doing like he was starting newspapers in California. So he moved to California to work to do like ad sales.
Okay.
And
newspapers are big back then. No internet.
Yeah.
Radio was something, but TV wasn't there yet. So newspapers are big.
But apparently it didn't go so well. God, it was a failed newspaper business. So then he goes to New York in 1924 when the stock market is booming.
Oh, it was the Roaring Twenties.
The Roaring Twenties. And he makes like $400,000 in the stock market.
$400,000 in his time?
What?
$400,000 an hour time?
No, in his time. Let me take out the calculator.
Take out the calculator. You know this guy's going to lose it all, right? You can tell. You can tell where it's going. I mean, he inherited $1.5 million. He lost it in 6 months.
That's $7 million.
Then he made $7 million in the Roaring Twenties. And then how long does that last? Does it go right to the track and bet it all on horse?
This is kind of worse, actually. So some Spanish aristocrat who claims to be like a distant relative of his wife.
Yeah.
He meets him. He becomes his partner. And then
like a gold mine in Spain or something?
He puts his name on all the bank accounts and he just drains them all and leaves.
Wow. Always have to blame it on the Hispanic.
No. Listen.
At the time, these things
happened.
Yes.
Back then.
No, but this guy's used to loss.
Yes. Makes him a suspicious man.
There's no internet. There's telephone, barely. But, you know, like, it's easy to come into someone's life, drain their bank accounts, and disappear into the night. There's no, like, Interpol to track you down.
Yeah.
Once you're on that boat,
Did track him down, but there was on a boat to wherever he was going. But he got away with it because his name was on everything.
Ash has really bad judgment.
Yes.
Like, he has really bad executive functioning because, like...
That is true.
No, but he made the money himself. He did what his father wanted him to do, see the world and make money, which he did. And then he blew it.
He's bad at making decisions.
Because
if my father told me that advice, I'd tell him, that's what you would do. Right. And that's not what I'm going to do. And I'd save the money.
Right.
Yeah. And then he makes 5 times that amount himself. and allows a Spanish man to take it from him.
I think his ethnicity has nothing to do with it.
No, he just is pretending to be a Spanish aristocrat. Right. So he
figured he doesn't need the money.
I feel you, but
someone who has 10 million wouldn't steal my little 2 million.
But what I'm telling you is that someone who has 10 million doesn't need to put their name on my bank account.
That's true. That's good. You're right. You would not be swindled.
No, I could not be.
So then he returns in 1926. He returns to Texas and settles in Houston. And Houston is kind of a shithole back then. It was swampy. It was just becoming
a swampy shithole.
Yes, it was. But it was
an up and coming swampy shithole.
Up and coming because that's what people were finding oil.
Ooh,
oil.
They didn't have Beyonce yet.
Oil became very important.
Yes. So Ash, when he gets back to, and he tells his wife, don't worry, you know that I'm going to figure it out. And she's just on for the roller coaster ride with Ash.
Wow.
So he starts out there as a car salesman, and then he does real estate.
Okay. Wait, just back up. Did she feel guilty?
I don't think so.
Not really.
Yeah, okay. No, not really.
Why would she feel guilty? I think he said.
Yeah, she didn't say this is my relative. Yeah. He was just.
The guy just blew into town.
Yeah,
he was just
what's it called?
Swindler.
A confidence man.
Got it.
If I were his wife, I'd be like...
He was a dirty, rotten scoundrel is what he was.
He was.
If I were his wife, I'd be like, what kind of fucking loser did I marry and lost a bunch of money twice? First, before I met him, and now that I know him. Holy shit. The only thing she should feel bad for is not giving him better advice.
I actually admire her for sticking with him. Yeah. Don't make people like
you more. Well, women didn't have that many choices.
That's true. But she's brave.
He is brave. So they go to Houston, Texas. He becomes a car salesman. Then he gets into real estate. And then through real estate, he gets into oil.
Oil in Texas. Can't go wrong there.
And he does become successful and have money.
Again.
He does.
Does he get to keep it this time?
This time, as far as I know, he keeps it.
He becomes a wealthy person
in the Houston society.
Got it. So he finally learned his lesson.
Yeah.
What year is this approximately?
1926. He's in Houston.
Okay. Yeah, so right before the Depression.
Yes.
He's rich right before the Depression.
But he stays rich.
Which is the best time to be rich, by the way.
But he was also rich during the booming period, but married. I feel like he didn't really enjoy it.
I'm sure he had plenty of fun. Those 6 months with that $69,000, he went to town. So
people are at war. He's losing money.
He did have a little snafu with the law when he was getting into oil. He was accused of fraud because he sold, I think he sold a piece of land that allegedly had oil but didn't. Right. And so a guy sued him, but he got off. Nothing happened.
Right.
So
instead of becoming swindled, he became the swindler.
So then he decided he always wanted children. His wife, unfortunately, could not have children.
Oh.
So the doctors told her she needed to have a surgery.
And it cost $7 million.
She had the surgery,
right with the money and her uterus.
But it still didn't work. She couldn't have children. So they decided to adopt. Uh-oh. So they adopted Joan Hill. Joan Robinson. Robinson, yeah.
And
Robinson is what?
Robinson is her last name. Ash Robinson. So Joan Robinson, but eventually she becomes Hill when she gets married. I just jumped the gun with her name.
When was she born?
She was born in 1931.
Okay.
Later on in life, when she was an adult, she found out she was adopted and she tried to find her biological parents. Uh-huh. And she found someone gave her birth certificate that Ash was actually her dad, who hired somebody to like a surrogate to have a kid with.
Oh, and that's so sweet.
So, and then he just kind of made this
How
whole
the
adoption.
Fuck is that sweet?
Well, he made
that's
it
so
like
sweet because he didn't want his wife to feel bad.
Yeah. So he
didn't tell the wife about it.
No. So he just made her in this adoption agency and they picked her. Right. And then, I don't think adoption was so regulated back then either, because the way they tell the story.
So I'm picturing a lineup he picked four ratty kids off the street to be the ones. She'll never pick those ratty kids. We'll put this. Then dress up the one he wants her to pick.
The way they tell pigtails. A story is the way they tell a story is she went to this adoption place and all the kids were on display for her. And then she didn't like any of them. And then she was about to leave. They showed her Joan and she fell in love.
I'm sure Joan was a baby.
Yeah, Joan was only a month old.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Hello?
So maybe they put dirt on the other babies' faces or something. Yeah, think about it. It's like a con. So you have to set it up so that she picks the right baby. She picks the wrong baby.
But why would she pick the wrong baby? I'm sure all the other kids were grown.
I don't know. I don't know. This is how Ray kind of tells the story, ballsy, but it's a little bit
pretty ballsy move on his part. But I kind of give him props for
the details don't totally add up with the adoption. But that's what. And Joan said as an adult she didn't care because her dad was her dad, her mom was her mom. And anyway,
But it's nice to know that your dad is your biological dad.
But that's probably where that came from him. Like, I don't think it was like a sweet thing. I think he was like, I don't want to raise a kid that's not mine. So he went and,
you know,
made it his.
You can turn down the man hating just a little bit and look at it with the glass as a glass half full.
Yeah,
I think that he, like, he didn't want his wife to know that he was going to do this.
Right.
But
maybe, I don't know.
You know?
So that's what,
it's not easy to adopt a brand new baby. Yeah. Here he was, the sweet part is that you guaranteed a brand new baby.
It's not sweet.
With your husband's genes.
If it were sweet, he would have told his wife.
He didn't want to make her feel bad in those days. I don't know if he did it artificially or he slept with this lady.
No, he definitely slept with her. But what I'm saying is his wife probably.
They had artificial insemination back then?
They did.
Put it in a canister and shoot it in.
Yeah, they did? People did that?
They had turkey baster.
All right. Well, either way, he was a very doting father, obsessed with his daughter.
Why
so
not?
Was she. Joel was like the light of their life. Like their world.
Only child.
Only child. Oh. Their world revolved around her.
Well, maybe not the way he's going around.
Well, that he says are his only daughter. And he also claims that that's not true, that she was adopted. But who knows? Records were, not so well kept. So she, like I said, totally doting. Like, he spent all his time with her when she was little. And then when she was 4 years old, she went to a carnival. She took a pony ride and she became obsessed with horses. Oh, so like,
just like her dad.
That points to biological.
So he buys her a horse. I think her first horse was like $150, which is also kind of expensive for now.
For them?
For then, yeah. I mean. And then she goes to, and she starts competing. Like, she becomes a competitive equestrian.
Show jumper?
Show jumper, taking her horse around.
I once show jumped when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, Aliana was good at it. She won ribbon.
Really?
I just fell off the horse.
Aliana looks like she'd be good.
She was very good. She won ribbons too. Like, if she didn't win first place, she was like bitter. And so was her dad. They would get like mad at the judges. He was like a soccer mom.
You have to be coordinated to do the show jumper.
Well, she was world class. Yeah. Wow. So she goes to college at Stevens College in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, her parents are so obsessed with her that they moved to Missouri too to be near her while she's in college. Like, they get an apartment nearby so they could be close to her.
But they're rich, right?
They are rich. Oh. So when she was in college, she thought about getting into acting. Her dad said no. That's not for, like, he forbade it.
She was beautiful,
it.
I'm assuming.
Yeah, she was beautiful. Okay. She was, and then when she's 18, she meets somebody who she wants to marry.
Oh.
Spike Becton. A naval pilot. Ash was like,
a Navy pilot?
Yes.
A Top Gun.
Yes. So Ash was totally, like he said, he's super protective, obsessed with his daughter. So he kind of like rejected all her male suitors.
Except for this guy.
Well, he didn't like him either.
What?
But eventually he relented because she said she wanted to marry him. She was, pushed. They get divorced after 6 months.
My dad was right.
Then.
Trust your biological father.
You don't really. Marry a guy named Spike.
First of all, it's 1950 something?
No, this is still 1940s. I guess 1940s. She was 18, so she was 1949.
1949, a guy named Spike. Yeah. There's spikes everywhere. Spike.
If I can give one piece of advice to women, is don't marry men in the military.
Why?
Well,
that is really unfair.
Well, they do have a reputation.
They do?
Yeah, for not being faithful.
For fighting.
For not being
and
faithful.
Defending our country and freedoms.
Or sitting at a desk.
Well, Spike was a Navy pilot. You see Top Gun?
I feel you. He could have been like their water boy. You don't know.
He said he was a Navy pilot.
Well, I guess back then they actually were fighting
Yes, and those were not like jets even. They were
Well, this was right after World War II.
Okay, so they were kind of jet-ish.
Yeah. So pretty soon after, she marries for the second time.
Okay.
To Cecil Burglass.
Cecil Burglass?
Yeah. That's kind of her name. I don't know if I'm saying it right.
What's he do?
He's a lawyer in New Orleans. Nice. Someone that she knew from childhood. Ash was vehemently against it. Said, no, you can't marry him. Forbade it to the point where Joan and him eloped.
Where they eloped? At where? There?
New Orleans, yeah.
Joan's like kind of a brat.
Let's see how this marriage turns out.
It doesn't work out.
Shocking.
But this time Ash was so mad that he like kind of disowned, like he left New Orleans, like because they, wherever Joan was, they moved.
Right.
So they went back to Texas. He said, I don't have a daughter anymore.
Whoa.
And it was like, he was really mad. But then 6 months later, her mom calls her and says, your dad had a heart attack. You have to come home. And when she gets home, he's like totally fine. And then he tells her.
How many TV shows have you seen that on?
And then
at least a dozen.
And then he tells her if she comes back home, that he'll buy her a new Cadillac.
Leave your husband for a Cadillac.
Yeah. And she was
no brainer.
And their marriage apparently wasn't so great anyway. So she's like, what the hell, fine. So she divorces for a second time. So she's 20 years old, already married and divorced twice.
Was the dad in on the he just had a heart attack bit?
I'm sure.
Or he was just like, well, the mom said, wanted them to make well, amends.
She said, I'm sure it was him. Ashley was very controlling. So I think she said either he had a heart attack that healed very quickly because he was fine by the time she got home.
I just had a heart attack.
So she's back. So she moves back
to. I had another heart attack.
No one asked.
Can I get some water? I'm having a heart attack. Are you sure? I'm better now.
So she moves back to Houston, and 1950s Houston is a booming town. Like, apparently the population from 1940 to 1960 went from 500,000 to 1.2 million.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a really
oil.
Yeah. So it was a really booming town.
Boom.
So she's living it up in high society. Ash bought a mansion in River Oaks, which is like the most exclusive, fancy neighborhood in Houston. And she, Joel is like, she's a socialite, party girl, going out on the town. She's in all the newspapers. And Ash loves it because even though he's rich, he kind of wasn't in society.
Right.
So like his daughter
old
gave
money,
him like,
new money.
Yeah, his daughter gave him like social credibility because she was in all the newspapers. And
but she didn't get married again.
Not yet.
She's single.
She's single.
Ready to mingle.
She's single, ready to mingle.
Going to all the socialite thingies. In the papers.
Yeah, there is apparently like this new hotel called the Shamrock Hotel that was like the it place in Houston, and she was there every night. And
she
had
a picture in the social register.
Yes, she was. At
this point, how old is she?
She is
in
like
her 20s.
Early 20s. She's in her early 20s.
This Joan is busy.
Yeah, she's busy. Ash keeps a close eye on her and her male suitors still. So any
what are you? After
so
the two.
There is a. And he would have like private investigators like follow them and find little, out about them. So one guy that was in the papers with her a lot in the column.
Yeah.
He apparently was going to his car one night and he got beat up. And he
thinks
believes
it was
Ash. That Ash hired somebody to like rob him and beat him up to stay away from his daughter.
Yeah. I mean.
But why? He didn't like the guy in the column?
What's well, he didn't like anybody. He really didn't like any like male. Like he was very possessive of
could
his
it
daughter.
Could it be?
Protective.
Could it be that Ash was right and she just had bad taste?
It could.
Knew
well,
it. She liked the bad boys.
She kind of.
Well, maybe she inherited his bad reasoning.
So
his poor judgment.
His poor judgment making skill.
So she was, like I said, out on the town partying, like, dating, but nothing serious. But she did meet, she did fall in love with Travers Fell.
Travers
Fell.
Fell. So Spike?
Yes.
What's that guy's name?
Cecil
and Travers.
Yes. Yeah, so she loved Travers. And
those are three names I think I've never actually.
I like Cecil.
She was, and at the same time, she was still doing her horse shows. Like that was the love of her life. Like she had there was a stable in Oklahoma where all like the horse girls would go and they like kept their horses. And her dad bought her a horse, Beloved Belinda, for $27,500.
Which was a lot of money.
Which is like $350,000 today.
That's a nice horse.
So a nice horse. And that's who she went like world championships with this horse.
Really? Wait, hold on. What's up with her mom at this point?
Her mom, you know, she's there. She's just like she's not like a strong voice in this story.
Right. Ash, you know? Ash has all the money and all the power. It's 1950s America.
Yeah.
Texas.
So she, at the stables where her horse is, that's where she meets Travers.
What's he do for a living?
Nothing.
The stable boy?
Well,
is this like the Princess Bride?
He has money. I think his family's rich, but he does nothing.
He does
so that's why Ash doesn't like him, because he doesn't work. And there's a funny quote.
Not like Ash, who lost all his money before in this betting on horses.
This is a funny quote to show you what a good guy Travers is. He said that when he met her, I had two other serious girls in my life, but within 48 hours, I'd forgotten their names.
Funny you mentioned, I used a similar line on my wife.
You're too busy. You're going to drop everybody else.
I'm
going to
drop all the other girls.
Yeah.
And I don't remember their names.
Yeah, so he was a stand-up guy.
He's a stand-up guy.
You know, he had two other girls at the
it's
same time.
It's kind of like that last episode of The Bachelor. Yeah.
Guys, yeah.
What?
It took me a really long time to realize that you guys are being sarcastic.
Sorry.
I thought that Travers was a good guy. I'm like, he's forgetting about his other two girlfriends for her.
No, it's no. It's
I mean, that you have two serious girlfriends at the same time is a red flag.
The irony of saying that statement, thinking it's endearing or like, that's like how love should be.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The lack of self-reflection in this.
I would have ate that shit up. I would have ate that shit up because I feel like back then, like that was a thing. Like people were dating like very seriously to marry. And so they were like testing the waters very seriously. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't doing like these long.
He said, I was dating two girls.
If he said one other serious girl, okay, but two other ones?
And in 48 hours, I forgot their names.
It's a little red flaggy to me.
It's a red flaggy.
Fine. A red You're flag. Probably right.
You know what? The way her judgment in men, it was probably like a green light to her.
Yeah, she was in love with him, yeah. but her dad was very like against, so they just secretly dated.
Okay.
So they didn't like, and she kept trying to get him to get a job so he would be someone
acceptable to her dad,
but
her dad is giving like Electra complex. Like, yeah. Leave her the fuck alone.
So then one night when she's out on the town, she's walking to the bathroom and she sees her friend Maggie and Riley Foster.
Yeah. They're sisters.
No, Maggie and Riley are husband and wife. Riley is a cardiologist and Maggie's his wife.
Okay.
And then she sees a
her sister.
She sees, well, Riley could be.
Maggie's Texas, right?
Riley's the guy. Okay. And then she's walking in the bathroom and she sees him like having dinner with some like hot guy. And so she keeps her eye on him. And her and Travers are kind of like in a falling out because he's not stepping up and da da da.
Who's having dinner with the hot guy?
Maggie and Riley.
The couple's having dinner with a hot guy.
Yeah. So she makes like eyes at her friend.
She's like, who's that guy?
Who's that guy? And so she comes to the bathroom and she says, I don't know. He's an intern who just moved to Houston and my husband brought him for dinner. So
is this where the plastic comes into the crime?
Yes. So this is John Hill. Let's meet John Hill.
Wait, what's the girl's name?
Maggie and Riley.
Joan. Yeah. Joan and John.
Yeah. Joan and John. Maggie and Riley are her friends.
No, I know. Yeah. But yeah. I just want to.
Joan and John Hill.
Joan and John are like the Cusacks.
Yeah. That's true. Right.
That's Joan and John Cusack.
Yes.
That's true. So John grew up in some backwaters town in Texas in the Rio Grande.
Backwater, Texas.
Yeah. It was called.
It's okay.
Whatever. Backwater, Texas. Some small town in Texas.
It's got a McDonald's.
But it was actually.
I get it.
But it was actually like a fertile part of Texas. So his parents had a farm and they.
Horses?
Yeah. Well, they had a farm and they would sell like supplies to the workers there and stuff. So their store like made like $1,500 a week, which is pretty good.
For that? Yeah. For them. Yeah. 100%.
So his mom.
It's really good for back then.
Yeah. So he didn't grow up like poor. Or anything. Right. But he liked to make himself like the country bumpkin in Houston.
Got it.
So his mom was super religious. Mm-hmm. His dad said.
Baptist? Protestant?
I think Methodist.
Methodist. Okay.
Yeah. And his dad said, you know, the mom has enough religion for both of them. She took care of the religion and he was like on the farm. But she raised her kids super religious. Like they knew the Bible front and backwards. And they also were very accomplished musicians.
Salt of the earth kind of people.
Yeah. So they were very accomplished musicians. They had piano lessons. Like
faithful.
Yeah. So he was one of three. He was the middle child, but kind of the most dominant one, even though he's the middle child.
Middle children are the best, Rosie, aren't they?
Yes.
What are you?
I would say no. I would say probably the youngest. The youngest is probably the best.
I think middle children are best.
He had an older sister and a younger brother.
Megan, what do you think? Middle children?
She's got a low bone in this fight. So he's super close to his younger brother, Julian, though they were like inseparable.
I love that name.
And he wanted to really be a musician. He was really obsessed with music, but his mom really wanted her sons to be doctors.
Help people.
So he said, I don't know. And he goes to college. He went to Abilene Christian College.
Okay.
And he had a sophomore year. He has this really good biology teacher. And he says, Mom, you know what? You're right. I'm going to go to medical school. And Julian.
It's always one good teacher.
Yeah. I had really bad science teachers. None of my teachers were bad. They just weren't inspiring. They were good at their jobs.
Right.
And they knew what they were talking about. Right. But the science teachers were always assholes. They always thought that they were better than you. No, they were like the worst. Like all of them across the board.
Thought you were a STEMinist.
I am, despite that.
I see. You overcame the arrogance of the chemistry teacher in 10th grade.
No, chemistry was like the least worst. Like the physics teacher, insufferable. The biology teacher I had was a lady, a horrible person. One time. This is so, I digress, but one day I was walking in the hallway and I see a girl throwing up in a garbage can.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh my God, are you okay? And she's like, throwing up.
Oh no.
You know, she's too busy to answer. So I go to class and I did like the bathroom, hall pass, whatever. I get to class. I go, oh my God, I was just walking down the hallway and I saw a girl throwing up. And my biology teacher, Miss Calleros, because you know, fuck it. Literally.
You doxed your biology teacher right here.
She pulls me up to the front of the class and she's like, what kind of human being sees another human being in a really bad situation and comes back and gossips? I'm like, if I didn't tell her, you wouldn't be able to go outside and check on her.
Exactly.
Fuck you. And also, I did ask her if she was okay, but she was busy going, And had you not screamed at me and publicly humiliated me, I would have gotten to that part of my story.
Yeah.
Yeah, she jumped the gun. You're right.
She did.
You're practically Florence Nightingale.
Fuck that lady.
You are Mother Teresa. I cannot believe that she would cast aspersions on you like that.
It's funny.
And publicly humiliate.
This was Catholic school, right? Like, they're so holier than thou. So I left Catholic school. The next year.
There was another person?
No. The next year, I'm like just happily going throughout my public school experience, greatest experience ever. And I receive an Instagram DM from said bitchy biology teacher who basically made me feel like I'm fucking antichrist.
Right.
She DMs, I have a lovely student who I like care about so much and she's transferring to your school. I was wondering if you would take her under your wing and show her.
And now she's your best friend.
And I'm like, no. Girl, you thought that I was such a bad person. Why would you ask someone to take, like, why would you ask me to take one of your favorite people under
my
wing?
Maybe she's not really her favorite person.
I left that bitch on red.
And that's why you didn't go to medical school. I get it. Let's go back to the story.
Fuck them kids. Okay.
So then John was accepted at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston.
That is a great college. Yeah. It's a great school. Great med school.
So
huge campus. Huge.
And then,
it's like a city.
Yeah. And he, so apparently Houston at the time also was attracting a lot of doctors. So yes. There was a...
The Baylor medical campus is tremendously huge.
So there were cardiologists, two cardiologists, maybe you've heard of them, Dr. Michael DeBakey.
Yeah.
And Denton Cooley.
DeBakey and Cooley, they're heart surgeons. Yes. Not cardiologists.
Sorry, you're right. And, that was terrible.
And many of the instruments that we use today are named after them. Like he said, give me the DeBakeys.
Okay.
Like they're like those. They named a lot of the instruments and made.
So he was doing like arterial reconstruction.
Yeah, it was like the place to be. Yes. Texas Heart. Whatever.
DeBakey sounds like a good name for like an edible company.
You're right. Maybe
DeBakey.
Noted.
And that's why you didn't go to medical school.
His like burned out grandson could definitely make that a thing.
If there's any burnt out descendants of Dr. DeBakey, hop on that name. It's gold.
So John decided he wanted to be a surgeon, and he specifically decided not to be a
cardiac
surgeon because so many cardiac surgeons were being attracted by them.
Yep.
But he said, I'm going to be a plastic surgeon.
Smart.
He's like, there's only 10 board certified plastic surgeons in the whole city of a million people.
Yeah.
And they're wealthy.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going to do that.
That was just when breast implants were beginning to come out too, I think.
And he said, I want to make money.
Okay.
And he also wanted a job that was more flexible because he still loved his music. So in his brain, he was going to do like plastic
less emergencies than in cardiac surgery.
Right.
Or
like
brain
you were
going to
get called in the middle of the night, that he could work plastic surgery during the day and then at night do his music.
Got it.
That was like his dream. So he decided to become a plastic surgeon. People said he did well in his residency, but.
He did the residency there at Baylor?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So apparently there was an incident where he was performing a
Paracentesis. That's when you like put a needle into the belly and suck out fluid to see if there's blood in it.
Apparently there's a danger of perforating a bowel when you do that.
Of course. There's bowel everywhere you look in that.
So when he did that, he perforated a bowel.
Okay, but it happens.
It happens.
It's not like his fault.
But
I mean, it's his fault, but it happens.
Yes, it happened. That wasn't what the problem was.
Yeah.
He knew he did it, but didn't say anything because he didn't want to admit he made a mistake. And then the patient died.
That's even worse.
Yeah. So that was the issue.
That's the worst possible outcome.
It's the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, so he got an infection. He developed peritonitis and died.
Inflammation of the
so that was more the issue, not that he made a mistake, but he didn't like he covered it, like he saw fecal matter coming in the thing and didn't do it, you know, like, that's a problem.
That is it's a problem.
It's a red flag.
It's a problem that all doctors need to
know what they don't know
you make a mistake, you should admit it emphatically and immediately.
Because if so he admitted that, the guy wouldn't have died, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Guy wouldn't have
even
died,
back then?
Yeah.
Because they said it's a common thing to perforate the bowel when you do that.
If it happens, you give them antibiotics, you can open the abdomen and wash out the abdomen. That you never see me use that machine in the OR?
Yeah. I said back
that's
then.
It's like a little sprinkler. They were doing heart surgery. They could definitely open up an abdomen and wash it.
Allegedly.
So yeah, this is like 1956. There's this portion of, basically there's a famous book about this whole story called Blood and Money. So the author writes this passage, which I thought you'd think was interesting because you always talk about how different specialties have different characteristics.
Different personalities, different
temperaments. So he said the orthopedic surgeon is medicine's carpenter.
Yes.
And they're often hunters, boaters, outdoorsmen.
Yes, often. And they're very into sports too. They're like jocks nowadays.
Yeah. The neurosurgeon classically...
We call them orthopods.
Yes, I remember you saying that. And then they said the neurosurgeon is does not get involved with his patients or with anybody. They're cool men, blunted, rarely gregarious.
Yes, true.
And then they said the heart surgeons are thundering egotists, star performers, 100%. In a dazzling operating theater packed with assistants, nurses, and paramedics.
Back then, yes. Today, not so much.
These are the men who relish drama.
Yes.
The heart surgeons. Yes, like that's back like then, Christina
it,
Yang.
Back then, like when the first heart transplant was done, the guy who did it, he became like a worldwide sensation, like an A-lister, as famous as any, as Einstein at the time. Like heart surgeons were like the shit.
Heart transplant's pretty, that's pretty dope. Like,
I know, but like, it's hard to imagine like a doctor doing something that would like vault him to like Einsteinian status.
Right.
But that guy did it and he was a heart surgeon. So yeah, heart surgeons are in that category.
And then the plastic surgeon, he's by nature a man of art and temperament and sensitivity. We are artists who deal in beauty lost or beauty that never was.
A little overly poetic. I make butts bigger and
yes.
Oh, what don't try to act like your mission statement isn't as like gooey as that one.
No, I like. Listen,
I believe plastic surgery. No.
So there are actually two or three kinds of plastic surgery personalities. There is one like that. They're into art and they draw and they paint and they fancy themselves an artist. But then when they actually get into plastic surgery, they realize that the human body is not like sculpting. It's not like painting. You don't just put it in one place and it stays there for 2,000 years like a sculpture.
Right.
And it frustrates that type. And then there's a type that go into it, like me, for the psychological, like they understand the psychology of what you're trying to do to improve self-esteem. And if you're able to have a little bit of art and more of the psychology therapy aspect of it, those types tend to do better than the ones that are purely artistic and yada yada, because they get terribly frustrated. They fail to see that you're dealing people. And there's a third type, which we'll get into in some of the other episodes that are psychotic.
Well, I think, I don't know, Johnny always sounds like he was in it for the money.
In it for the money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
some of those too. Yeah. There are some of those
too. He was artistic too. He's into music and
yeah. But first of all, the money back then in plastic surgery
he thought like a plastic surgeon can make like $250,000 a year easy. That was a number that he said.
$250,000 in 1950. How what's that in your calculation?
Let's see.
It was in the late 50s by now.
Yeah, he was. This is the,
so $250,000.
Like $4 million.
No, I'm gonna guess. More. I'm gonna guess like no, it can't be.
No, not more. Know. Sorry.
It's gotta be like 1.6.
No, she's probably right.
Cause it's like 3 point something.
No, what is it? What's $250,000?
She said that.
Let's say 1950s.
2.6.
2.6 million. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's cruising.
I said 4 or 3.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
very good. Yes, that's a good living.
So that's what he was hoping for. Like I said, the flexibility to be a musician. Okay.
Yeah.
So that night, like I told you, Joan made eyes with her friend and said, I want him. So
poor fucking Travis or Travers.
Poor Travers. Travers wasn't stepping up to her.
When you have a rich dad, you don't need to step up. Your dad does.
Oh, so
but her dad didn't approve of him.
Dad didn't approve anybody.
I'm saying Travers had a rich dad.
Oh, yes. I don't know. But Ash didn't respect it. Because he needed someone who would work and had like a work ethic.
Right.
Ash is not one to judge.
Ash is pretty judgy. Ash is super judgy.
I'm saying he shouldn't be one to judge.
Yes.
No, but he is because he's like his father told him not to just sit on his butt.
I guess.
So they're at dinner.
Yes.
So she sees the hot surgeon intern, whatever.
Correct.
And asks her friend to introduce them.
Yes.
And do they get introduced?
They do. Maggie sets up a dinner for Joel and John at her house.
Right.
Very nice of Maggie.
Very nice of Maggie. And it goes great. Joel and John are infatuated with each other. They're so happy. So maybe Joel has finally met the right guy.
And one that her dad would approve of.
Maybe one that her dad would approve of.
I mean, what is this? Like four times the charm?
So maybe finally she finally found love and the right guy, a respectable doctor.
Someone she could take to society dinners.
But Maggie thinks they're a mismatch. She thinks they have nothing in common and that they're not right for each other.
Love is love. Who cares?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I feel like sometimes the friends are always right.
Maggie.
And sometimes the friends are wrong.
Maggie might be right.
Oh.
We'll find out in part two.
Not part two.
Part two.
Tune in next
time. I'm just joking, guys. We're going to hear part two right now. You're just going to have to wait.
To Crime and Plastic.
Crime and Plastic.
Brought to you by Crocs, the best Crocs out there.